And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are recapping the last couple games for the Kansas Jayhawks, a pretty bad loss for them against Baylor, and then a good bounce back game against Oklahoma. To help me do that, I have joining me as usual, Steve Fetch, the basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. And I'm going to go ahead and do this at the top of the show. I kind of change it up a little bit. If you haven't already, please do go out and make sure you get this podcast as quickly as you possibly can. If you can subscribe to our podcast channel, right now we are at Rock Chalk Talk. Just search for that anywhere that you get your podcast, and you can subscribe there, and we'll get that to you. You can also find us on Twitter at Rock Chalk Pod. But with that, we're going to jump right in. The first game obviously was that Baylor game. It didn't turn out, I think, the way that anybody really wanted it to, with Kansas taking a rather convincing loss to the Baylor Bears in Allen Fieldhouse, the first win ever for Scott Drew, which is honestly kind of surprising. I wasn't sure when I was ever going to see it. And it sucked just as much as I thought it was going to. So my first question for you was, does this result change anything about the way you think about either the Kansas team or the Baylor team?
Not for me. I mean, I think, going into the game, I thought they were both really good, both, top five, top 10-ish teams in the country. I still think that I know Kansas is still ahead of Baylor and like KenPom and Torvik, suggesting that they would be favored on the neutral floor, which I know Jesse Newell got a lot of flack for ranking Kansas ahead of Baylor this week in his AP poll. But just, for the record, I am in full support of that. I also would, if I had a poll, I think, if you base your poll on who would win on a neutral floor, where number one would beat all the other teams, number two would beat everyone except for number one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I still would have Kansas ranked number one, to be honest with you. As for the game itself, it was kind of a weird game. I think it was KevBo9 on Twitter posted a thing where, other than like the last 6 or 7 minutes of the first half, Kansas really outplayed Baylor and outscored them and everything, but they just collapsed in that little stretch for whatever reason. I don't know if it was because of the Dotson, going out with an injury and they had to adjust to that. Obviously, they made the comeback without him on the floor, but I have to imagine seeing him limp to the locker room was not great and probably had them thinking that their season was potentially over, that kind of stuff. So, who knows how much that had to play with it. But I think the only thing maybe that is a little bit different is I think the offense is a little bit worse than I thought it was. I think they're always going to be able to score on not-so-good teams because they've got so much talent. But against those good teams, Baylor did a really good job of clogging up the passing lanes and forced a lot of turnovers. Kansas turned it over on like 23% of their possessions, which is way too many. And the Baylor forced them into a lot of tough shots away from the basket. They didn't let Azubuike get clean catches inside. And Kansas did not take advantage of the open threes that they got either by not attempting threes or when they did attempt them. They obviously didn't make enough of them going just 4 of 15 from three. So kind of one of those things where everything kind of combined to make it a bad performance for Kansas. But like long term, I still think they're the favorites in the Big 12, and I still think they're the best team in the Big 12 and still, a threat to go to the Final Four, to win the national championship, et cetera.
Yeah, so a couple different things. Like I agree with you that I don't think that this game really told us anything about either of these teams. We all, or anyone who's been paying attention, knew that Baylor is a top five team even prior to this game. It had a good feeling that they could potentially win these types of games. But you also have to look at what all had to happen for Baylor to win this game. Dotson went out with an early injury, and we talked about previously, just how much this team relied on Dotson, and we even speculated maybe that they they rely on him too much. And I think you saw that. Like, the offense completely cratered. The defense as well had lots of problems with Baylor right after Dotson went out. And that's when Baylor made their big run. was when Dotson went out and Kansas was scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. You know, they looked really bad. I don't have the splits in terms of when the turnovers happened, and I haven't gone back and tabulated it all. But if I remember, at least half of the turnovers they had came in that stretch when they were trying to figure out what to do without Dotson. And then, of course, you know, when Dotson comes back later in the game, you know, he comes back for the last bit. And while they get him back in there, he's obviously nowhere near as effective as he was before. And so they really tried to kind of lean on him again as a crutch. And he wasn't able to do the types of things he's normally able to do because of that hit pointer. The other thing that really kind of stood out to me looking at this box score is that the one thing that I said had to happen for Baylor to win actually did happen in terms of three-point shooting. You know, Baylor shot 42%, which is a very good clip. You know, it's not like absolutely barn burner, like where the heck is this coming from type of pace, but, you know, still going 8 of 19 from three is still a very, very good showing. And then Kansas on the flip side, Isaiah Moss was ice cold, going 2 of 8. And then Ochai Agbaji, the guy that I thought could pick up the slack, only shot 1 3-pointer. And that, and like, that's what really happened, was this game got away from them because Baylor was shooting threes consistently and making a good clip of them. And Kansas, when they shot them, didn't make them. And then really, like you said, didn't shoot nearly as many as they really should have. You know, we knew that they were going to be able to get pressure on Azubuike down low. We knew that they were going to be able to cause problems there. But even then, Azubuike only turned it over twice. You know, McCormick didn't turn it over at all. It's like the thing that I was afraid was going to happen in this game of big guys getting clogged up down low and turning the ball over, not being able to kick it back out. It didn't really happen. It's just Baylor was able to get them out of a rhythm enough. And then the loss of Dotson was so huge for them that they were just never able really to recover. You know, so like you said, Kansas is actually number one now after Duke lost to Clemson. Kansas is now number one in both KenPom and Torvik, you know, followed very closely by Duke and Baylor in both of those rankings. You know, and so it's really honestly not that surprising to me that Kansas is still up there. This isn't changing my opinion too much, other than to, you know, kind of highlight what we had talked about, that Kansas is just an injury or two away from a key guy, you know, from having lots of problems this year, like most teams in the Big 12 and in the nation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, about Azubuike, and I think this can be, you know, applied both when Dotson is on the floor or not. The issue to me so much with him isn't, you know, his turnovers, it's the turnovers that other people have while trying to get him the ball. And I think that they, you know, it's obviously a coaching point by Bill Self to, hey, force feed him as much as possible, which I think is correct. But that leads to a lot of, you know, they stand there and look at him for 3 seconds and, you know, pump fake a couple times. And that obviously allows the defense to adjust and swarm him and everything. And tough for him to really do anything when he catches it with, you know, multiple guys around him. And it's obviously tough to get him the ball. So, one thing that, you know, we'll probably talk about when we talk about the Oklahoma game, but that's going to lead to a lot of potentially open, you know, 3-point looks, and the guys just have to do that. You know, they have shooting. I mean, I, you know, this myth that Kansas doesn't have good shooters is, I think, you know, incorrect. It's just the guys have to take those threes. So that's one thing, you know, going forward, I think they can improve is, hey, if defenses are really going to crowd them, really going to help, you know, you got to throw that skip pass for a three. And again, you know, we can probably talk about that more in the Oklahoma game. But I think if they would have taken some more threes and opened things up, not that they would have won the game, I guess, necessarily, but I think it would have been a lot closer than it was, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. You know, so looking forward just a little bit for these two teams, and you can kind of throw, I think, West Virginia into the mix, because they are also playing really well so far. I mean, do you see anything different in terms of the, you know, the Big 12 race? Are you worried at all about this? Like, you know, I think I was very high on Baylor anyway. I thought, and in the preview that I did with Kendall from our Daily Bears, you know, we were talking about, I could see kind of those two games. I figured that Kansas and Baylor were going to split their two games, whether Baylor won here and then Kansas won in Waco, or if both teams won at home. Like, that's a very, very, you know, I easily could have seen that. What I'm not really surprised by is just how strong these teams are. But the other thing that kind of jumped out to me is that West Virginia has kind of sneakily, you know, kind of creeped up they're number four in KenPom. So you know, which is kind of crazy to think about. KenPom is one Kansas, two Duke, three Baylor, and four West Virginia. You know, the Big 12 itself is kind of in a position similar to what the ACC has been in the past, where it's really, really top heavy. But I don't know if it's necessarily quite as deep as it is, or as it has been in prior years. But I mean, do you see that this race is going to kind of go down to the wire with these three teams? You know, it's one Kansas, three Baylor, four West Virginia, and then also by KenPom, you know, West Virginia has a second ranked defense, Kansas is third, and Baylor is fourth.
Yeah, and I guess I'll start off by saying, now that the streak's over, I really don't care about the regular season Big 12 title anymore. I just kind of want them to be healthy and ready to go for the NCAA tournament. But yeah, I think it is going to come down to those three teams. I think you look at the rankings and you look at some of the charts around Torvik and KenPom and similar sites, and there certainly is a stratification in the Big 12 where those three teams, and by the way, West Virginia, I mean, surprise of the season for me so far. I mean, they've been a lot better than I thought they would, but those three teams are really separating themselves from the rest of the pack. If you're looking at just conference games, you know, Texas Tech has been pretty good as well, but they've also gotten to play Oklahoma State and K-State as well. And granted, they've played Baylor and West Virginia too, but they just murdered Oklahoma State, which is really helping their in-conference efficiency stuff. But if you look at full season, it's really those three teams, Kansas, Baylor, and West Virginia, and then a pretty big gulf before you get to the rest of the team. So I think it's definitely going to come down to those games. You look at some of the problems that Kansas has had in Morgantown, and that, you know, might end up making a difference. You look at some of the problems they've had in Waco. I mean, they've definitely lost some games or played worse than you would maybe expect them to in Waco. So I would say Baylor is probably the favorite at this point, just based on how good they've looked and the fact that they have a win in Allen Fieldhouse. But I also don't think it's over or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination, given how few conference games we've played.
Yeah, I mean, and as is normally the case, like, I think those three teams are essentially going to split against each other, and it's going to come down to who is able to steal the most games on the road. Obviously, Baylor has that big leg up, you know, with the win against Kansas, but these are three fairly close teams, and it's just a matter of now taking care of business. But, you know, the only reason I think that it still matters in terms of who wins the conference is because, obviously, you know, the goal is to get yourself set up as well as possible with as high of a seed in the NCAA tournament. With how strong the Big 12 is at the top, but not necessarily the entire conference, you know, really being considered to be very strong, it may be that winning the conference is the only way to guarantee a one seed. And now a one seed obviously isn't the end all be all. You know, you can still make a deep tournament run as a one, and being a one doesn't guarantee that you're going to make a deep run, as we're all aware of. But, you know, that in the past has been, you know, part of the reason Kansas has been so successful in the tournament where they have is because they've been able to secure one or two seeds. You know, I still think there's a very good possibility that all three of those teams, especially if they all went out to the level that we're expecting them to, you know, if they each only have two losses in the Big 12, because, you know, they basically split with each other, and that's it, and they beat everybody else in every other situation, which it may not necessarily be realistic, but theoretically you could have, you know, all three of those teams pushing for ones and twos, and then it's a matter of who gets, you know, where they want to go geographically, which is going to be important, and obviously winning the conference, it helps out with that a lot. I agree with you that, you know, it's not the end of the world if they don't win the conference this year. Now that the streak is over, like, there's no, you know, until they win five in a row, like, nobody really is going to care too much about making sure that they win it every single year. But, you know, I do still think that it's an important indicator. If you're able to come through the dogfight that is the Big 12 Conference, it's still going to be a strong indicator, I think, of having good success in the tournament, being able to get to the second or third weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is, you know, Baylor and West Virginia obviously are going to be quadrant one wins, whether they're at home or on the road. And with the Big 12 this year not being as strong as it is, there aren't – I think those are probably the only teams you could say are going to be a quadrant one win at home for sure. Maybe Texas Tech if they kind of keep it up, but there aren't going to be those. You know, you can beat the you know, sixth or seventh place team in the Big 12 and get a quadrant one win. So Kansas is doing pretty well in that regard, given that, you know, they've got the win over Dayton, the win over Colorado. I think BYU is still a quadrant one win. So they're not hurting for him by any means, but if they can go ahead and, you know, get some more, that would obviously be great. And then, you know, you look at the Big 12 tournament. While I'm, you know, usually anti caring about the Big 12 tournament, if Kansas does get, you know, the 2 or 3 seed in the tournament and then can beat both West Virginia and Baylor and win the tournament, whereas, you know, if they're the 1 seed, they're probably only going to be playing one of those 2 teams. You know, that might be an extra little leg up too. And then, like you said, I mean, it all tends or trends toward, you know, mattering in terms of where they go in the NCAA tournament. They're probably going to get to go to Omaha for those first 2 rounds regardless. So that's nice. You look at the regionals, you know, there isn't anything, you know, super close. It's Indianapolis and Houston are where the Midwest and the South are this year. I think either one would probably be relatively equal for Kansas. So maybe not, I guess, super important just because, like I said, I do think they're going to get to go to Omaha pretty much regardless of what happens this season. And then, you know, Indianapolis and Houston are kind of not really any better than, so the other two are New York City and Los Angeles, which, you know, obviously farther away, but I don't think it's going to make a huge difference this year. It's not like there's one in St. Louis or Kansas City or something like that.
Right. Yeah. All right. So I think that's about, well, real quick, before we go ahead and move on, was there anything else about this Baylor game that kind of stood out to you? Anything else that you wanted to talk about real quick?
Well, no, I mean, you know, just that I think it's important that Devon Dotson gets healthy and, you know, we can talk about that as we go into the Oklahoma game and the Texas game, but it'd just be nice to let him rest up and get healthy rather than rushing him back, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and ultimately I think that's the biggest takeaway from the Baylor game is just how important some of these key players are for Kansas. We already knew how important Marcus Garrett was, kind of being the secondary ball handler, you know, and the defensive wizard that he is. We saw that earlier this year when he went down. You know, and now kind of seeing with Devon Dotson, I'm just hoping we don't need to get any more of these lessons of, you know, how important are guys because we're going to be without them for a few games because they get injured. So, knock on wood there, but we're going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the Oklahoma game, but we'll be right back on the Rock Chalk podcast. And we're back. All right. So Oklahoma, obviously that was a whole lot better of a performance for Kansas, than the game was against Baylor. You know, so looking at that game, Kansas wins 66-52 on the road, so in Norman, without Devon Dotson. And while this game, you know, it was a little tighter than I think you wanted it to be. You know, Kansas was only up by 1 at the half. You know, Kansas really kind of pulled away at the end, just kind of wore Oklahoma down, which is saying a lot given the fact that Devon Dotson did not play. You know, and so they were essentially kind of throwing out some random lineups for a good portion of the night. Who was the one player besides the obvious in Udoka Azubuike, because he was just a beast on the boards? Who's the one player that really stands out to you in terms of kind of gave a little bit more than you thought he was going to be able to?
Well, man, if I only have to pick one, you know, I'm gonna say Isaiah Moss. You know, we'll talk about Marcus Garrett. I've talked about him a lot this year, but really nice game from Isaiah Moss, 6 of 11 from 3. You know, didn't really do a ton else offensively. You know, he had the one assist, had a couple of nice, you know, little dribble drives and stuff like that. But just to give them that kind of an effort from 3 and something that they're going to need a lot more going forward. Hopefully it kind of accomplished 2 things. Hopefully one, it kind of let Bill Self know that, hey, this offense is at its best when it's, you know, letting guys shoot 3s. And then 2, hopefully it's, you know, letting Isaiah Moss know that, you know, he should be shooting those 3s. He should have the confidence to attempt those 3s because he's, you know, been a good shooter for his entire career. And he's obviously going to have really open looks, especially when Devon Dotson gets back. One thing I did notice, so Jif Hawk, or, you know, it should be Gif Hawk, but, you know, doesn't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, posted kind of a supercut of all of Moss's 3s. And one thing I noticed is that a lot of it is on just very simple actions, you know, dribble drive to one pass away. You know, there wasn't a lot of like scheming to get him open. There wasn't a lot of, you know, very elaborate, you know, 3, 4, 5 pass sequences. It was just, you know, one pass away type stuff, maybe a brief skip pass. And so I think that really drove home to me that when you've got a guy like Azubuike drawing that much attention, you know, you can do, you can manufacture 3-point attempts a lot easier than you think. And if Kansas does that, I think they can, you know, really open things up inside, and then they start feeding off each other. But when you refuse to shoot threes, you know, guys aren't going to go out there and guard you, or they're just going to kind of half-heartedly go out there and guard you, knowing that you're going to try to pump fake and go by them or pass around them, or just try to dump it back into the post and stuff. And if they do, you know, shoot more threes, that just opens everything up. Plus, you know, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but three is worth more than two. So if you make some of those, you can, you know, either build leads or erase them a lot quicker than you can by only shooting twos.
Yeah, that's math for you there. So, but yeah, so the thing that jumped out to me about Isaiah Moss, and maybe this is me kind of picking up on trends from a very small set, but it seems to me that he seems to like lull opponents into kind of a false sense of security, where he doesn't do a lot of extra movement inside the offense. He's not, you know, running around trying to find somewhere. He more or less finds a part of the court and kind of sits there. It doesn't drift very far unless he's being asked to take over ball handling duties for a play or two, which, you know, causes his defender to start looking other places that he can help out, which opens it up for a lot of passes, like you were talking about, where it's, you know, you don't have to scheme a lot to get to him. You don't have to go through all this complicated offensive sets to do it. He like kind of encourages his own defender to start looking elsewhere to stay involved in the play, which then gives him just enough room to go ahead and get it and take a quick shot. And, you know, I don't know that I remember anyone doing it quite the way that he did. Like, I went back and actually watched this game and a couple of the prior games. And the nights where he's on, he's not trying to do a lot in the offense. He doesn't run around, you know, set a bunch of picks, run, you know, try to find open spots or anything like that. He essentially finds a couple different sweet spots in on the court, one on either side, and kind of just hovers around there and waits for his opponent to get bored and go look for something else to do. You know, and so like, if that's kind of the game plan, I think that other teams can kind of catch on to that a little bit here and there. But I just don't know, you know, how much. I know a few people that have played basketball, and they said that one of the things that they hate the most is when their guy just doesn't do anything, because it makes them feel like they're not participating in defense the way that their coach wants them to. And so they do. They start looking around, kind of making sure they're not missing something, trying to make sure he's not, like, trying to set a screen that they're going to have to then switch off on. You know, it makes guys uneasy when they're not moving around and the other team is running offensive sets. And so you know, even if it's something that they are actively, you know, keeping track of, it's hard to kind of get out of those instincts being a Division I basketball player and looking for ways to contribute on the defense. Some coach is going to get smart and just kind of, you know, say, look, this is your guy, park out there with him, do whatever you need to do. And that might shut him down for a game or so. But I have the feeling that he's kind of doing this now because it's working and that they're going to have something kind of dialed up. You know, am I kind of reading too much into it, or have you noticed something similar?
Well, no, I mean, I think you're kind of on the right track. I do think, you know, one thing is if people do that, and then you're essentially playing, you know, 4-on-4, I think that really benefits Kansas, because then you've got one less guy to, you know, harass Udoka Azubuki. So I think, you know, Kansas would be A-okay with that, even though you are taking away their best three-point shooter. Although percentage-wise, actually, Christian Brown is now their best three-point shooter, but that's neither here nor there. I think, obviously, you know, Moss is, but one other thing I think that I noticed anyway is I think a lot of these plays work better with Marcus Garrett handling the ball than Devon Dotson. I think Devon Dotson, and I mean, I you know, as much as I love Marcus Garrett this year, I think Dotson's still a better player, but I just think that when you get in a pick and roll with Dotson, or if he beats his guy, he kind of has this singular, you know, get to the rim mentality, and it certainly worked out for him. He's, you know, drawing a ton of fouls. He's scoring at the rim and stuff really well. So, you know, no complaints or anything like that, but, you know, I think Garrett looks to pass a little bit more and is able to find shooters in the corner and on the wing and stuff a little bit more while still having the ability to score. So it's kind of a different look, and one that I think maybe Kansas, you know, should go to a little bit more. I do think, you know, even though Dotson's 3-point numbers this year are not great, I think as like a catch and shoot guy, he would still be good enough to where you can, you know, stick him in the corner for a few possessions and stuff like that, which, you know, A, would hopefully get his shooting numbers up, and then his, you know, confidence in shooting the ball up 35 plus minutes every game that he's healthy. You know, he's going to need to take some possessions off and stuff. And I think that's a good way to do it, rather than him, you know, trying to enter the ball into the post or whatever, because this at least, you know, keeps Marcus Garrett active. You know, it keeps other guys, you know, active in the offense, rather than just kind of standing around waiting for Dawson to make a play.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think, you know, I think that kind of jives well with what we've kind of been talking about, in that Devon Dotson is not the best facilitator on the team. That's definitely Marcus Garrett. You know, that's probably the one area of his game that needs a lot of work, especially if he's going to be a point guard in the NBA before he goes off. You know, is he needs to be able to, I guess, kind of see the floor a little bit better, to get guys involved, be able to anticipate where they're going to go. You know, it's a skill that he still needs to develop. I don't know if it, you know, that in of itself would be enough to keep him from going to the NBA after this year, you know, barring some sort of, you know, like barring this injury that he has kind of nagging him throughout the year and just really sapping his effectiveness. I don't think that's going to happen. And so, you know, I think what Bill Self kind of alluded to, that Marcus Garrett is kind of the point guard of the future for this team, most likely meaning next year, you know, since it will be his final year of eligibility. Like, the expectation is that Devon Dotson's going, and that Marcus Garrett is going to be more than capable of leading this team. And we got a preview of that against Oklahoma. Yeah, it wasn't, you know, we weren't getting as much production offensively from the point guard spot in point guard type of sets for him. But Marcus Garrett found ways to, you know, make himself a weapon in terms of passing the ball off and then getting to position and then getting the ball passed back to him for, you know, a good layup, or, you know, kind of faking inside and then being able to drive on his own past the guy and get a layup and things like that. And so, you know, I think that the team is going to be okay, especially if Devon Dotson is out for the next few games. Which, honestly, I kind of hope that they are, or that he is, because, you know, looking at the schedule that Kansas has coming up, it's not a super difficult stretch by any means. You know, like, the hardest game coming up is next weekend against Tennessee, but that's not even a Big 12 game. So then you get into February 1st against Texas Tech. Like, yeah, sure, you'd like to have him back by that game, you know, and that's like 3 weeks away. So, you know, I think that's completely realistic if you just kind of shelve him until that point. There's not really a game that I'm expecting them to have a lot of problems with, especially, you know, if Marcus Garrett's playing as well as he has been. The one thing defensively for this team, I don't know if this was the defense playing good defense on him, but, you know, I was absolutely terrified coming into the year of Brady Manek. I thought he was just going to have another one of those games where he just absolutely goes off against the Jayhawks, especially from three, and that they weren't going to be able to do anything, and, you know, they were going to score an upset. Obviously, that's still theoretically possible when they come back, you know, on February 15th to Allen Fieldhouse. But I'm not really necessarily that worried about it. Like, I thought down in Norman was where it was going to happen. Was that Kansas playing really good defense on him, or was he just not shooting well?
Yeah, you know, I think they probably got lucky on a couple of, you know, open threes. But I do think for the most part, you know, it was good defense. They did really well on him. They did really well on Christian Doolittle, too. You know, Christian Doolittle, probably Oklahoma's best player overall, just 3 of 11 from two, which really incredible. I thought they were going to have some problems with both those guys, just because, you know, Marcus Garrett can only guard one of them. And then it's kind of a, what do you do? And Kansas obviously is a really good team defense. You don't get to be ranked as high as they are in KenPom without being really good as a team. But obviously Marcus Garrett is the guy defensively who makes that go. And if he can only guard one of them, it kind of stands to reason that the other one might do well. But yeah, Kansas did really well on both those guys, and I think it was more so a credit to them than anything any of the other two did wrong. So, like you said, anything can certainly change when they come back next month, but this definitely makes me a little bit more confident going forward in how Kansas is able to defend those kind of stretch four guys like a Manek.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I don't have any more thoughts about Oklahoma. Did you have anything else you wanted to share real quick before we move on?
No, just kind of nice that it was a nice, boring game, to be honest with you. That was kind of nice to see them go down and just take care of business without Dotson.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I do want to look ahead to the game against Texas briefly, but before we do that, I need to throw it to one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so looking ahead to this Saturday, you know, Kansas is traveling down to Austin to face Texas. I mean, is there anything about this game that has you maybe even worried just a little bit? Or, you know, I have not been impressed by the way that Shaka has you know, really done much with this team. They are currently 8-point favorites, if you look on KenPom. You know, Texas does not really match up very well, and their offense has tons of issues. So, I mean, is there anything that has you concerned about this game?
No, not really. Of course, there wasn't really last year either, and then Kansas went and lost to them. So you just never know. But I think, you know, they've got some talent. I guess I don't really understand why they're not better than they are. You know, Matt Coleman has been one of the better guards in the Big 12. Jericho Sims has played really well. Andrew Jones, you know, coming back from frickin' cancer, has been good this year. So, you know, they definitely have some talent. They just kind of haven't put it all together. So not super worried. I mean, obviously any road game is a worry, and they have a few, you know, long, lanky athletes, which might cause some problems, but overall they're going to need to have one of those games where they just make a ton of threes, and they do shoot a ton of them. You know, they shoot a ton of them, so they're going to be very comfortable taking a lot of attempts. It's not going to be something out of the ordinary for them. They don't shoot them very well on the season, so if they do have kind of a, you know, higher end of their distribution, so to speak, where they make some more than normal, you know, pressure will be on. But I am expecting Kansas to win somewhat handily.
Yeah, you know, as is usually the case, I'm just worried about a guy like Courtney Ramey or someone just going off from three, you know, shooting 10 and making like eight of them, leading to a disaster of a night for Kansas. But like you said, you know, this Texas team just doesn't, I don't know what it is. They just have never been able to really get it together. They either get off to a really hot start, you know, and then fall apart like they've done the last few years, or, you know, they struggle at the beginning and then are able to put together enough to be kind of respectable by the end of the year. But they just never seem to be able to put a full season together. And, you know, my hypothesis surrounding that has just been, you know, that Texas made a big mistake when they tried to hire a system coach like Shaka Smart, who is, you know, his calling card was the Havoc defense, you know, the Havoc game. Which is not the type of game that you can play with the caliber of athlete you should be able to expect to get at Texas. And he's been able to get really good recruits to come to Texas. He just has not been able to get his system to work well with them. And I think it's because he's not playing the type of system, you know, that really maximizes what these guys are able to do. You know, we talk a lot about coaches and the style of play that they like and whether they're well suited for different kinds of jobs. And I'm not saying that Shaka Smart is a bad coach. I think at the right school, in the right sort of system, he could be a very good coach. And we saw that when he was at VCU. The problem is, I don't think his strengths transfer well to the Texas position, especially. And so, you know, I'm expecting them to continue to struggle as long as Shaka's there. I do think that once Shaka moves on to another school, he's going to find a good situation and he's going to bounce right back. And it's gonna, you know, ask questions about, well, is Texas just that bad of a job, cause all kinds of problems. I don't necessarily think that teams can't, or coaches can't be successful at Texas. I just don't think it's a good match between what Texas is able to give to Shaka and what Shaka is able to do to get a team going well. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think my feelings about Shaka Smart are well documented. I didn't think he would work at Texas. Finally got one right. As far as this team specifically, you know, I follow Jeff Haley on Twitter, who does a lot of writing for Burnt Orange Nation, excuse me, which is the UT site for SB Nation. And his diagnosis is basically that they just don't really have any, you know, tough guys. Don't, you know, no heart, no energy guys. The talent that they do have are guys who kind of play more like, you know, more like a Quentin Grimes than like a, you know, Jamari Traylor or Landon Lucas or, you know, guys like that, which I'll be honest with you, I've only watched them play in that Purdue game where they beat Purdue. So I maybe have a higher opinion of Texas than a lot of people just because that's my only exposure to them this year. But I guess we'll see on Saturday if he's right or not.
Yeah. All right. Any other final thoughts about Texas?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not expecting this to be a particularly close game, to be honest, unless Kansas just can't figure it out offensively for whatever reason. You know, they've been prone to go on cold stretches for whatever reason. I don't think if they do in this one, it'll be because of what Texas does. I think it will be because of what Kansas just isn't able to get things going. So, all right. So we will go ahead and leave that there real quick before we get out here for the night. We were talking before we got started, and it didn't sound like you had a random sports minute. So instead, I'd like to do something we don't typically do on here, but talk about some of the Jayhawks that are in the NBA, because there's been some surprising, I think, developments for some of those guys, specifically Devontae Graham. You know, he is having a very, very good second season in the NBA. You know, has gone from essentially being the third tier point guard for them to now kind of being one of the key cogs for that Charlotte team. So thoughts on Devontae Graham, you know, and the fact that he has the second most assists in the NBA behind only LeBron James.
Yeah, and I think he's up there in 3-point makes too, and up there in 3-point makes per game as well. So I think there's a movement to try to get him into the 3-point contest, and maybe even the All-Star game the way he's been playing. Just been incredible. I think it's kind of a just further confirmation that I think draft people, and I'm certainly guilty of this. I handle more college stuff than the draft, but I think people tend to get a little bit too focused on what people can't do. You know, Devontae Graham, an older guy, you know, not the biggest guard, stuff like that. You know, is he really going to be able to make an impact in the NBA and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And yeah, he sure has. I mean, his age hasn't been an issue. Obviously, it's going to, you know, curtail his prime a little bit, where he's going to age a little bit faster than other guys and stuff like that. But he's been tremendous. I say that as a huge Devontae Graham fan. He's been a lot better than I thought he would be. Certainly better than, you know, general consensus thought he would be. And I think he certainly deserves to be in the 3-point contest and probably deserves to be an All-Star as well.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it kind of highlights, you know, how much we can't really tell going into the draft, because a large portion of how successful teams are has to do with the fit of the team that they get to. You know, I mean, like we saw Frank Mason, and he had flashes here and there, but he hasn't gotten, I think, nearly the run that Devontae Graham has gotten in Charlotte, just because of the way that that Sacramento is set up. And so, you know, while I think going into the NBA, I think everybody considered Frank Mason to be a better player, you know, kind of in the role that they expected him, you know, as a backup point guard that could, you know, that could kind of provide a spark here and there. Like a lot of people saw very similar roles for those two in Devontae and Frank. And what we're seeing is that Devontae Graham is able to get into a situation for him where he's able to really play to his strengths and really kind of show what he's able to do. And now the team has bought in enough that they're kind of starting to build some things around him and finding ways to highlight him, which is an opportunity that some other, you know, Jayhawks haven't really been able to get. You know, other guys that kind of jump to mind would be, you know, I'm thinking like Xavier Henry, some other, you know, just some other guys that have gone to the NBA recently and never really latched on anywhere. You know, I think the ultimate example of that would be like a Thomas Robinson, who bounced around the league a lot, not because he wasn't talented enough to play, but more because he just was never able to find that spot where he was going to get a legitimate shot.
Yeah, Ben McLemore is another guy who, you know, bounced around a bunch and now finally has caught on with the Rockets, and I think has found a system that best suits his talent, so you're starting to see him play well. But yeah, I think, you know, Graham is definitely probably the biggest data point in terms of KU guys, where, you know, shooting trumps everything. I mean, he definitely did not have the full package like a Wiggins or, you know, even a Josh Jackson, or someone like that. But just his insane shooting ability has kind of put him over the top of all those guys.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Fetch, thanks for joining me tonight. Thank you guys so much for listening. We said at the top of the show, but I'll remind you guys here, do go out and search for Rock Chalk Talk so you can subscribe to the podcast and get all the episodes as soon as they come out. If you can give us a rating or review, I'd really appreciate it. 5 stars, nice comments. It'd be really great to kind of help us out to get the podcast out there. If for whatever reason you're not able to do that, please do let us know what it is we can be doing better for you guys. We really do bring this podcast to you guys for your entertainment, to get you all the information that you could possibly need about the Jayhawks. So if there's anyone you ever want us to you know, try to interview, if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, anything like that, you can email us, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. Obviously, you can contact us on Twitter @RockChalkPod. And of course, you can interact with Fetch over on the Rock Chalk Talk account @RockChalkTalk as well. So we'll go ahead and leave it there. Fetch, thanks again for joining me again. And thank you guys so much for listening. And we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.